Thanks, everyone, for watching Around the League here from UGASports.com. I am Dane Young. That is Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus. I do not have Coach Donnan with us today. He did have another obligation to attend to, but we will catch back up with him next week, which, Brent, I guess that'll be our finale unless we want to do something deep into the SEC championship game. But, I mean, that's it's coming up soon, too, so we'll have to see what we want to do. Maybe a bowl season. I don't know. We'll figure out what our future on this is for off season. But for now, we do have five SEC games to consider, and we will start with Alabama and Arkansas. But before we get there, I want to give you a chance to plug the interview that we did yesterday and kind of send people there. It's on the same YouTube channel. So why don't you tell us about who you and I spoke with yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday was a whole lot of fun. And for especially for Georgia fans, and really for anybody who watches us just because they want to hear about SEC stuff, Jeff Foxworthy was able to join us yesterday. And he, in terms of, and we were talking like in terms of recruiting, I knew he was a follower of recruiting, but he's an insane follower of recruiting in Georgia football. And, you know, to the nth degree that many of us and many of you out there follow it. And he was phenomenal, had some great stories. He hates Florida probably as much as anyone on the planet. he would not let Dan Mullen come backstage. I mean, it was phenomenal. Head to UGASports.com. Let's check that out. The YouTube page as well. And even, you know, for those of you that are on the dog vent with UGA Sports, I posted a kind of a transcript if you want to hit Cliff Notes kind of thing. So it was just a phenomenal interview. So much fun. It was just fun. And we were trying to kind of, and you could tell I'm like, hey, you know, it's hard to take a lot of your time. And he's like, no, let's talk more. Let's talk more. And it was awesome.
Yeah, my favorite story that he told, and you'll have to go to the podcast for full context of how this worked, but Jeff Foxworthy once got in a fight in the student section at Georgia Tech, and it was because he was pulling for Georgia. So how he got there and why he does root for Georgia, I think that'll be interesting. So go check that out. That's actually within the first 10 minutes of our chat. Yeah, so you can go find the podcast feed on wherever you listen to podcasts, UGA Sports Live. It's the same spot that you hear this Around the League podcast. So just go back one episode if you haven't already, or if you just want to listen to it again. I mentioned that Bama and Arkansas is, if I had to pick a marquee game of the week, I'd probably go with that one. Just because Alabama's getting set for bigger and better things, I would say, beyond the SEC schedule. Brent, where do you start with Alabama and Arkansas? Because even if you want to go to the other side of the coin, Arkansas had such a hot start, Sam Pittman getting a lot of national recognition. Razorbacks have three wins, and everyone kind of looking at it and saying, oh, down to earth.
And they were 3-3. And I thought, and my sort of, I was like, hey, they're going 500 and they're going to get the five wins. And you look at their last two losses where lost by three and then lost by two to Missouri on a last second field goal last week. And, you know, you didn't have Felipe Franks last week. You had KJ Jefferson play. Young guy and played pretty well. And you put up, he scored 48 points against Missouri.
That was one of the games of the year in the SEC so far.
It was a phenomenal sort of back and forth game, comeback late, a lot of sort of just a fun game to watch. But I really thought they'd be 5-4 going into this game to where even if, you know, obviously even if they lost to Alabama, they would still get the 500, but they're not. And they're going to, obviously Alabama's going to do, I think, do what they want with them to a certain extent. And the interesting thing about this game and then this next game we're going to talk about, Florida LSU, is how much do you see the starters play? Because this has obviously been such a weird grind of a season. And when you look at what, like, for example, how much Devontae Smith is a part of the passing game for Alabama, are they just going to do what they do and play three quarters and give him 15 targets and do that? Or do they throttle – you know, sort of back off the throttle a little bit and say, hey, all right, we got an even bigger contest and, you know, an assurance of a playoff spot next week. So that to me is the most interesting part of this game is how long is it a game? And then once it's not, how much does Alabama sort of throttle down?
Do you think that Devontae Smith's working his way into maybe even top five territory in draft stuff or is he?
I just feel like
he's been surging.
Very much so. I don't think he's getting there, but top 15, I think you're definitely getting into that realm for him because, you know, he's 5'11", he's 6 foot, he's 180 pounds. It's not like he's the physical freak of nature that you see some of the guys that go really, really early. His speed. It'll be interesting to see what he runs in terms of the 40, but you know what he's done as just the growth each and every year at Alabama is amazing. And I think he does. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, he's like the fourth guy for the Heisman, you know, or you know, one, if they have five or something.
I think he's got potential to get votes to be the Heisman winner.
Yes, I do. And I do. And I think he's going to get in there some, but it's like, how many do they invite? That's always an interesting thing to me, but he has played absolutely phenomenal this season. You can't doubt that.
Frankly, you could pluck three guys off that Alabama offense and throw them in the Heisman ceremony, and I wouldn't bat an eyelash, because I think Najee Harris has had a season worthy of being recognized in that way as well. And obviously Mac Jones. So just really phenomenal what they've been able to do with their offense in 2020. And like you've been saying, that sets a trend and a precedent for where the game goes from here.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Very
and
much
I think
so.
We've seen that with the numbers.
Yep. I think you are spot on with that.
Let's do move to LSU and Florida. It seems like rock bottom for LSU. I looked it up yesterday. We're not even a calendar year removed from Joe Burrow accepting that Heisman Trophy in New York in that same ceremony. So how much has the world changed since then? Not only for LSU, but for everybody. And wow, you know, on paper, you would have thought LSU playing Florida at the end of the SEC regular season would have massive implications, but it really doesn't.
It's two things. One, it's amazing how time flies. Even though it feels like this year's dragged on forever, for LSU, it's kind of like, oh my, that went from, you know, euphoria and perfection to an absolute, you know, like you just said, sort of bottom of the barrel type season. But that, I think this game above all else shows how important just the schedule was this year and how things had to fall into place for, you know, someone like, you know, Florida. Now they got A&M early and A&M beat them, but they didn't have to play this game at all. And now LSU is basically has who knows how many players that left that are actually, you know, competent and normal, supposed to be their kind of guys, because so many opt-outs and other various issues that they've had. But, you know, Florida is still – they're at a point where they are really, truly rolling on all cylinders from an offensive standpoint. Defensively, they've gotten better each and every week, but it's going to be interesting to see how they match up and what they do against Alabama. I don't think they're quite going to be able to slow Alabama down in any way, but offensively, it's just, they're unreal right now. And, you know, when you think about how much Pitts and Tony have been sort of making plays all season for them, last week was the first game all season that both of them had over 100 yards receiving in a game, despite, you know, all the things that they've done this season offensively. So it's another one of those games, like we just talked about with Alabama and Arkansas. Does LSU put up a fight? Do who's left put up some form of fight? But if not, when does Florida sort of throttle down, or is Dan Mullen just going to chuck it 50 times and keep going at it and getting his guys, giving Trask Heisman type numbers even more so?
Hey, you've got the Gators preparing for that SEC championship matchup against Alabama, and then whatever could potentially follow should they pull that upset. But then you've got LSU almost bracing for signing day at this point from a roster management situation where Eric Gilbert is likely, I mean, he's opted out already. He's likely to end up in the transfer portal and leave. And he was going to be one of your primary offensive playmakers. And I almost wonder with LSU, if Miles Brennan never gets hurt, how much is that a Band-Aid on their season? Because the Tigers were moving the ball on everybody when he was in there. He was playing at such a high rate that it was – I mean, it was obviously less than what Joe Burrow did, because that was legendary. But, like, it wasn't a massive drop-off is what I'm saying.
No, he was still putting up the numbers and still – he still made them a threat. And I think if he doesn't get hurt, you know, they're probably in the 500 territory – and you're seeing a completely different vibe and season about that. But then you go and you got to give, you know, the true freshman, either of them, Finley or Johnson, the time. And then it's a snowball effect from there.
And then how about LSU doing the self bowl ban? I mean, it's like good time to get in there and admit, hey, I didn't study for the test. I've been cheating this whole time. But you know what? I'll just take the zero now.
Hey, we're going to take an extended vacation. It's been a rough year. It's been a rough sort of 6 or 7 months in a way. And and what was interesting, it really started with Ja'Marr Chase. Once Ja'Marr Chase opted out, now that's even more pressure on other players. And then it just kind of, it snowballed. Miles Brennan gets hurt. It really, truly snowballed from there, because I think if Chase stays, Chase plays this season, Brennan stays healthy, their season is a completely different feel to it.
Yeah, and I said that Ed Orgeron's on record pace to complete the Chizik cycle, which is mediocre to national championship winning to out of a job. And he might end up doing that all within about three seasons at the pace they're going at. Because I think for the second straight year, you're going to have both coordinators likely replaced, if I had to take a guess. Defense, for sure. There's no way you can justify bringing back Bo Pelini.
That's one I think that will change, yes.
Ensminger, we'll have to see. But the pressure is there. Maybe with injury. You don't think so?
Well, who knows where the pressure is right now, actually, when you think about it. Is it pressure from the upper level saying, hey, coach, you got to make some level of change here. We have to get this, you know, in the right ship. Or, and that's what's interesting about this season in general, is how much, at least from an upper administration level or people, you know, those decision makers, how much of it is, hey, this is a year where, all right, we're just going to look beyond any issues that may happen, and then we're going to reset and refresh and restart next year without sort of massive change? Or is it, hey, if you can't handle this adversity, you're not gonna be able to handle much, you know, you moving forward, you're kind of in a little bit in trouble too. So I think most will err on the side of, at least decision makers, err on the side of, hey, this is a different year. We're just going to reset, breathe, and go forward next year as is.
I would have thought the same thing, but then South Carolina's already hired a new coach. Vandy has to hire a new coach.
Yes.
And it's a different situation, but Georgia's
finding
an athletic director.
Yes.
And now, obviously, that's not because of performance. It's because of a retirement situation. But all to say, it doesn't seem like 2020 is going to be holding punches back when it comes to personnel changes. And I think you would see that on underperforming staffs with assistant coaches as well. We're getting in the weeds a little bit, but I did mention Georgia. The Dogs go to Missouri to play a little chilly game against the Tigers. It doesn't look like it will snow, but it looks like it may feel like it's in the high 30s with the wind chill temperature in the 40s. So that's good old Midwest football weather, I would say, Brent. Georgia finding its identity a little bit, but obviously the game against Vanderbilt was canceled last week, or postponed, I suppose, to next week. The Bulldogs trying to see if they can continue their passing attack that has changed since JT Daniels took the helm. What do you want to see from Georgia in this game?
I want to see physical domination just from on both lines of scrimmage, because Arkansas did what they want in the running game against Missouri, and really offensively for the most part did what they want against Missouri's defense. I'd like to see a lot of that same thing from Georgia. And then secondarily, this is actually a very good test and a very good game to watch if you want to watch Georgia's defensive line against Missouri's offensive line from a pass blocking standpoint, pass rush standpoint. Because when you look at Missouri's kind of season in a way, now they've won and had some success, I think, you know, 5-2 since the start. But Larry Borum, right tackle, has allowed one pressure on 245 pass block snaps and has come back and has been back in the fold the last few weeks after missing some time. And Connor Bazelak, who they went to at quarterback and has played well. And when you think about sort of a description of him, there's nothing that's overly great, but there's nothing that's overly terrible. He's very accurate. I think he's had 70% completion, right around 78% adjusted completion.
He gets the job done. That's the way I think about it.
He gets the job done, and he's played even better when Borum has played at right tackle. Now, the interesting part of that is that you don't have Azeez Ojulari. I went and looked, and I was thinking, all right, how much are we going to see that matchup? Because that's what NFL draft guys want to do. They want to see, hey, your best, your guy against somebody who is an NFL-level player. Azeez has lined up on the defensive right side, the offense's left side, 232 out of 296 snaps. So he's going to be working against the left tackle from Missouri, not Borum on the right side. So how much does he sort of feast on that side? And do they give him help there and then leave Borum alone on the other side? I think that's because basically in the year, Missouri has the number one, what we term PFF pass blocking efficiency, which is basically a way of looking at pressure, accounting and adjusting for the number of snaps and then sort of some weighting towards sacks. But they're number one in the league in that from an offensive line standpoint. And Bazelak's only been pressured on right around 23% of his dropbacks. He's only been sacked on 16% of those on the pressure dropbacks. So he gets rid of the ball well. So if Georgia can do what they want to do and do what they should do on the offensive side of the ball with their line of scrimmage, but also then put pressure on Bazelak from the defensive side, whether it be with their front four or with blitzing, I think they handle the game quite controllably. If they don't do that, I think it's going to be interesting, and the game is going to stay a sort of within striking distance from Missouri longer.
For people that haven't seen a lot of Missouri or don't know a lot about Eli Drinkwitz, he did come up with Gus Malzahn kind of through that system. And then obviously he was at App State as their head coach for a year, coordinator before that. It's a lot like Gus Malzahn offenses in the sense where the running game doesn't always get the chatter, I guess, and people don't always talk about it, but it sets up everything else that they do.
Right.
That threat to be able to get that little quick run up the middle, but do it kind of from a spread format. A lot of motion in the backfield, a lot of things to kind of trick you. So it's going to test Georgia's front seven, which is, we know, Jordan Davis hasn't been a part of recently. To me, though, I think you're going to be able to see where Georgia's buy-in is and where the team's mentality is based on how the cornerbacks play. We're at this stage now where kids that are going to be going pro, players are going to be looking for combine work coming up to prove to NFL scouts that they're worthy of a draft pick. Their eyes and minds are going to be there and not on the games that they're playing. That's going to happen all over the country. And you're going to see a lot of sloppy football from people that just aren't focused because their mind is somewhere else from where their body is. Georgia's got three defensive backs that I think will likely be in the NFL draft process. How do they fare against a quarterback that, as we said, gets the job done? So their level of buy-in, which I think it'll be fine. But if there's any struggle there, that'll tell you a little bit about how Georgia's viewing this game and potentially one more remaining in their season.
And Missouri spreads it out. They have five different wide receivers with at least 30 targets. So that they take the next, Drinkwitz has really taken the next step from the Gus system and evolved it from a passing perspective as well. Not necessarily down the field, by the way. Bazelik is very inaccurate and doesn't really hit a lot of big plays. He only has five touchdown passes. So they sort of work the ball down the field with the controlled passing game and then let the running game handle the things in the red zone. But they still spread it around. So everybody from a defensive back standpoint is going to get work on Saturday.
Lewis Seen is feasting because that means a lot of stuff in front of him, yes, which is where he performs the best for sure. We mentioned Auburn. Let's move on to the Tigers playing Mississippi State and one of the more intriguing games in the country, I would say, with Gus Malzahn trying to find any kind of momentum. I thought he would get that, not necessarily job saver, but the one that you kind of feast on in the offseason to get you through it. But now it's Mississippi State, and we've seen a little momentum come from Mike Leach and the Bulldogs, which is kind of crazy considering the roster management situations that they've had. What are you seeing with this game? And I'll tell you on the front end, this game will have my bold prediction.
Mine as well, actually. A little bit of mine as well. But this game to me is very big picture type thing. Because when you look at Auburn under Gus Malzahn, obviously the first year they went and played in the national championship game. And even in the whole decade, if you look at the decade of Auburn football, since 2010, they have – the Cam Newton year, undefeated national champs, the year where they got beat by Florida State in the national championship. Every other year, they've lost at least four games. Every other year that Gus has been a coach, they've lost at least four games. And it's just always that, hey, we beat somebody really good, and Gus has a great record, has as good a record as any against Nick Saban. But on a consistent week-to-week basis, it's just not there to be. I mean, even the year they went to the SEC championship game and lost to Georgia, they still lost four games that year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have that. And then you also have Mississippi State, who have had every reason to be just tanking and struggling and looking very Vanderbilt-esque, but they haven't. Like they won a hard-fought game, obviously, against Vanderbilt, but still, even in the last 2 weeks, played Georgia extremely tough.
Only to lost Georgia to the fourth quarter.
Yep. Played Ole Miss extremely tough, only lost by seven. And, you know, what offensively we've seen from those teams, holding those teams to just 31 points, that's actually kind of a win in a way. And I think they're actually going to make Auburn really, really work on the offensive side of the ball. And it could be one of those things for me where Mike Leach kind of comes in with a bang and then goes out with a bang as the season wraps up.
You know, I saw because Bo Nix is one of the more intriguing players in college football at this point, and it may have been Spencer Hall. I guess they're with Moon Crew now. He's also on Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network. One of my favorite Twitter follows. Every day should be Saturday. Is EDSBS, whatever, is his Twitter handle. And I think he made like a wheel of like, what's this play going to be for Bo Nix. And it, I mean, he has the crazy thing where he'll be facing in the wrong direction and throw a touchdown, which I don't know how that happens. But then he'll also like just fumble the ball out of nowhere running to his left, or he'll overthrow a wide open guy. Like, you get so much good Bo Nix and so much bad Bo Nix that you don't know what you're getting play to play, much less week to week.
Very true. Very true. And when you think about quarterback play, as you look at quarterback play and then project it to the next level and then what you want to see in the next level, being able to just literally drop back from a clean pocket and complete passes, that is the most stable. If you can do that, it's the most stable metric of all quarterback metrics. Mm-hmm. And that's where he's struggled. He's struggled just in rhythm. Now, he'll thrive sometimes when it's chaos and make those great plays. But when you struggle from just consistently dropping back and completing passes, now I don't think his offense helps him a lot, but it's you're always going to be sort of that inconsistent guy if you can't do that consistently.
There's a little bit of like some poor man's Johnny Manziel, not quite as fast or anything like that. But you know how Johnny, especially NFL Johnny, just like, yeah, he could do the crazy play and get you 20 yards on something that was dead. But at the same time, that routine stuff, you know, he does have Seth Williams out there too. He's got good guys around him. So
they have some players.
Offensive line is still kind of a mess. And until Gus fixes that, I think that their SEC West journey will be difficult. No team's had a more difficult journey this season than Vanderbilt, currently searching for a head coach with early signing day coming up next week. You know, I've heard a lot of names out there for them, but they do have a game should it continue to happen. We're recording this on Thursday. It was Friday last week that Vanderbilt said that they were unable to play against Georgia, but maybe it'll be different for their in-state game. Tennessee and Vanderbilt, I cannot think of a game that probably has less national intrigue with two teams from a power conference like this. I mean, it's going to be a hard watch, I think.
I tend to agree. And this game is – like Vanderbilt, they have a lot of issues and issues beyond – things that are even sort of matter to me on Saturday. This game is more about Tennessee in that mindset, because when you look at what Tennessee has done over this season, especially given the positive vibes and the positive expectations that were coming into this season and the streak and the, you know, how they closed out last year, they've now lost six straight games by double digits. They only got to 20 points in one of those games. Mm. And that would have been against Georgia, which you got helped with a nice little fumbled snap issue on the second or third play of the game. So, you know, you basically haven't scored 20 points and lost six in a row. You are at the bottom in terms of where you are as a program, and at least where you have been for a long time. So, and you watch, I mean, I watched a decent amount of the Florida game because I just wanted to see how long they could stay in it. Harrison Bailey wasn't bad, but he didn't do anything that stood out in any way, shape, or form. And then they bring in Trout, who had only thrown one pass all year. That was an interception. And he actually played really well and, you know, got the backdoor cover against the Gators.
That was my bold prediction last week. I said they would cover. So.
Yes, you did. You Thanks did win that. But his – and what's interesting about that, and it just goes to show, when you are lost at the quarterback position, your team is going to be lost. Shroud's passing grade that last week, 74.9. That was the second highest passing grade of the season for them. Garantano had a 76.3 against Missouri in the second game when they played actually pretty decently against Missouri. So when you have just four different quarterbacks playing, you have no one really doing much of anything, you as a team are going to struggle. And it was no more summed up than, to me, Jeremy Pruitt's comment after the game I saw, where he said, "Every week, so you all never have to ask me again. Every week, we see who competes well in practice, who does the best job that we feel like affects the guys around him, and we will do that as long as I'm the head football coach here at every position, so you don't have to ask me again." Well, guess what, Coach Pruitt? I disagree.
Yeah.
Quarterback is different. It just is. Whether we like it or not, you have to treat the quarterback position differently. Your team has to have that defined leader, just like for Georgia this season. When Stetson came in and Stetson was playing well, you saw the belief. You saw guys after the game, "Hey, mailman delivering," all that kind of that talk, that a belief in that position and a belief in the leader of the team from that position. if you don't define that for your team or it doesn't show up, you're just going to be floating. And that's what Tennessee's done.
There's one other position on the field that I think is that way. And I think it's kicker. Because if you've ever seen a team's body language when a kicker comes out there and they just have no confidence that he's going to make the kick, yeah, or vice versa, when it's a 50-yard attempt and they're right. Like, oh, yeah, he's got this.
That's our guy.
Yeah. But when you see a team have kicking issues or they trot out three different guys in a game, but that makes sense, right? Because those are the two players that have the most say in how many points get put on the board. Now, obviously, everyone else contributes as well. But when you're talking, it's like who touches the ball the most in plays that end up in points? It's quarterbacks and kickers. And always will be. That's just how the game's designed to be, and especially how it's evolved in the passing game. I'm not surprised we got off track with our conversation because I just don't have a lot to say about Vanderbilt at this point. Yeah. We're going to pick this game, but we're going to do it by the spread. And you said the spread was 15 last you saw?
Yeah, last I saw it was 15.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll go up. If they play, who knows?
Well, that's the biggest thing is, I mean, you've heard a lot of sort of interesting issues going in and around the Vanderbilt program. And it's – does this game happen? And even for next week for Georgia, does that game happen? Because obviously that was going to be senior day for them. So, and for me, I will say this, if Vanderbilt plays this week and thus then plays next week against Georgia, if those two games do happen, give me any number on planet Earth. And I think Georgia hits it next week.
I mean, it's got to be in the 40s to start.
No, I don't. I think you can higher.
Yeah.
No matter how high you put that number next week, I'm taking that number. I'm taking that number.
You know, the Vanderbilt thing that surprises me is that Nashville's, you know, it's the one of the gyms of the South right now. And so many
growing massively people, in population.
So many people want to be there. So in theory, it'd be one of the better towns for an SEC player to want to live. But the administration there just doesn't have interest in that, so it seems, which not is kind of sad for an SEC program. Let's do make our picks. We'll start with the spread. Are you going to go Vandy with 15, or are you going to go Tennessee?
After all that was said, I think I'm actually going to take the points. I'm going to take – now, granted, Tennessee could get right and all that. By the way, this is obviously if the game happens. But like I just said, Tennessee's lost six in a row, and they haven't scored. They'd only scored 20 once, and that was because of a fumbled snap that they did.
All right.
And when you're struggling like that, I think you know maybe Vanderbilt has one thing in it because it's Tennessee, and you know maybe the guys that are there, and they do, and if they get up and they play and they have enough, at least cover. They at least cover.
I'm gonna go with Tennessee.
You're probably making the better choice, very much so, but. Yeah, this is more of an anti-Tennessee pick than it is a pro-Vanderbilt pick.
Coach Donnan did text me earlier and did say that he would pick Tennessee as well. I don't know if we were going to do the spread on him, but we can ask him later on. We'll have him down for Tennessee, and he can recap us if he wants. The other game I thought we should pick, because I really did think everyone was going to pick Alabama to beat Arkansas, thought everyone would pick Georgia to beat Missouri, thought everyone would pick Florida to beat LSU. Ole Miss and Texas A&M got canceled already, so we're looking at Auburn and Mississippi State. Another intriguing game, and maybe it's just that Auburn is intriguing with anyone that's either not Vanderbilt or not Alabama. Maybe that's what it is.
And this is sort of part one of my bold prediction of the week. I'm taking Mississippi State outright.
In this Ooh.
Game. I just – something tells me that Leach has a in with a bang, out with a bang type moment in him. The quarterback's actually played well. Will Rogers has played well for them, extremely accurate. Their defense has – given teams while and still giving up points, it's given teams that have scored a lot more points problems and slowed them down to a certain extent. They're playing hard. And that's the thing you've seen, I think, from that team over the past month or so is that despite of all their issues, they're still playing hard. Yeah. So I think they get the win this week.
Coach Donnan also picked Mississippi State, so you're not on that island alone.
All right.
To me, this looks like a way to clinch. You and I are tied.
Because we're tied, right? Tied.
You and I are tied. So this to me, I don't like ties like that. I will go out with a bang. I'm going to say Auburn wins this football game, but my bold prediction is also from this game. I'm going to say this is the craziest SEC game of the year. And hopefully it will set up some Mike Leach and Gus Malzahn matchups for the future, because who knows what that could yield. Yes. And I think it will, at least for another year, and we'll have to see from there. But if you go back into the history of Auburn and Mississippi State, it doesn't tend to matter where the programs are. It tends to be a really tight ball game. Even the year that Cam Newton won the national championship at Auburn, I think that game was like 13-7, or it was very low scoring early in the year before anyone knew what Auburn kind of had going there. Mississippi State, for whatever reason, tends to be that bugaboo for Auburn, kind of like South Carolina in some years can be for Georgia, right?
Yes.
And maybe it's just the overlooked thing. I don't know if it's going to happen at this point, but I'm going to say that's the craziest, zaniest SEC game of the year. And that's even considering the Egg Bowl that was a couple weeks ago. And I mean, probably so far you'd have to say that SEC game of the year might be that Missouri-Arkansas game last week. I mean, I'm trying to think of some others.
And then you had the Arkansas-Auburn finish with the what should have been a fumble kind of thing. I mean, that or you know, whatever it was with Knicks.
Yeah,
that was crazy. So you know, they've been involved.
Maybe it'll be the SEC championship. We'll see. That's my bowl prediction.
So I got to bring up part two of the bowl prediction. Part two of the bowl prediction is that I think, unfortunately, you are going to beat me in the fantasy football playoffs this week.
Oh,
I think you know we have this 18 playoff. You know, I didn't get a bye. I was the top seed. And you're hanging around there. I feel like I'm due for a bad week. I had the highest scoring week I've ever had all year last week. So I think part two of my bowl prediction is you take me down in fantasy. Kirk Cousins kills me this week for some odd reason.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, there is a fantasy football league that a lot of us on the UGA sports reporting side of things are in. There's a few other people from other outlets that are in as well, so that's fun to be able to play them. We had this raging debate over GroupMe about how many teams should make the playoffs, which, you know, our intern,
Seth voted for six, by the way. I voted for six.
I voted for eight. You know why? I was probably the sling vote.
Because you could get in.
I wanted to ensure that I got in, and even though I thought I was probably going to get in anyway, it would give me an easier matchup if there are more teams, right? So if I was six, then I'm going to play someone that's not two at that point. So that's what I said. And, you know, that's playing the game, Brent. You should have done like a lobbyist in Congress and rally your votes, and you didn't do it.
I did not campaign very hard. I just made my vote and stay quiet and let the chips fall where they may.
This has been the Around the League podcast from UGASports.com. Let me give you some things to look forward to for this weekend. I'm actually going to go out to Prince Avenue Christian School for Brock Vandergriff and the Wolverines in their playoff game tomorrow. We'll have some coverage for, you know, on UGA Sports.
It's a massive game
as well.
Massive game. Eagles Landing Christian, what, like 4 or 5 time defending state champ or something like that. In that class, they had a 60-58 game last year or something like that. So it's going to be a great game to see.
Yeah, some of the best competition that I think Vandergriff has played really in his high school career. And he's played them before. But just to see what he does this late into a season, it's probably the state championship game if you really want to be honest about it, more than likely. So that's coming. We'll have some coverage of that. We will have our watch-along party with head coach Jim Donnan. Brent, you are set to be there as well with myself. And we'll watch Georgia and Missouri at noon Eastern. That's 11 Central. So get your coffee or, you know, if you wake up really early and you can pregame, you do you. That's fine. We'll have that coming up. And then obviously we'll see if Georgia has a game next week. Right now that is scheduled. So we'd have one more week to get ready for SEC championship and whatever else comes from there. Brent, any final thoughts?
No, I actually am legitimately looking forward to this Georgia-Missouri game. I want to see JT Daniels against this team, against that defense. They have some players on the defense. Now, they're not strong along the line of scrimmage, but I legitimately want to intrigued to see this game, especially Georgia from a defensive side and how they defend Missouri.
And y'all go listen to that Jeff Foxworthy interview.
Yes, 100%.
It's better than what we just did here. I can promise you that.
Way better.
This has been Around the League from UGASports.com. Thank you, Brent. We will do it again next week. And thank y'all for listening.